Okay, now we are convening as the Judiciary Policy Committee. I will note a quorum is present. Members, this will be Senate File 86. In your folders is an unofficial engrossment prepared by Senate Counsel incorporating the changes in the bill that the committee made at our last hearing on this bill last Thursday. Also in your folder, you will find a series of amendments that I, as the chief author, will address when we hand the gavel over to the vice chair of the committee, Senator Goodwin. So, Senator Goodwin.
Welcome to your committee, Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are you going to want to start with the A5 amendment?
I'd like to just preface, if I may, Madam Chair, that at the conclusion of the last hearing, you know, we had heard a lot of input from members of the public, those who were interested in the topic, including the ACLU, the Minnesota Council on Governmental Information. I think I've got that acronym correct, NCOGI, and input from a number of others, and subsequent to the hearing, including Mr. Neumeister, and subsequent to the hearing, we also received memoranda from or written input from those groups, as well as the chiefs of police that had restated some of their suggestions for how to handle these issues. I reviewed all of the information that was received with counsel and with staff in consultation with a number of people. The result of that consideration are the series of amendments that you have before you now, whose general aim is to address the concerns of privacy, of use of data, of restricted access to the data, of public accountability and oversight for the systems that will maintain the data, and which will oversee access to that data. So it is my hope that this committee will find the proposed amendments beneficial and helpful, and will bring this bill into shape that there's a comfort level with the committee to vote for it and move it on. So with those remarks, I'd like to ask the committee to consider the A5 amendment.
Mr. Chair. Or Senator Latz, I just want to ask if you want to ask for any testimony between these amendments or at the end, how would you like to do that?
I suppose, you know, there may be some testimony that's particular to the amendments. They have been posted online. I'm not sure who all has had an opportunity to review them. I suppose it would be appropriate to ask with each amendment if there are individuals that have any input in particular for that amendment, but also I'd suggest that, you know, if they all go on, or however many do go on, that we give members an opportunity also, of the public, an opportunity to comment and as well, and then those individuals can decide whether they want to address it amendment by amendment or come up as sort of as a batch to see what the whole picture looks like when they're done. So I'd like the committee to consider the A5 amendment. There was a suggestion from Mr. Neumeister that the, quote, reason for the hit, close quote, be identified when there was a search of the database and there was a hit. And the language, reason for the hit, was not probably the best language to use for purposes of statutory drafting, I personally agreed with the suggestion on the merits, and so asked counsel to draft up the A5 amendment, and she came up with the language that that attempts to address that concern. So I'd ask the members to take a look at the A5 amendment and to approve it.
Any questions on the A5 amendment from members? Seeing none.
And I move the A5 amendment.
Senator Latz moves the A5 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
I'd like the committee to consider the A6 amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator Latz moves the A6 amendment.
Madam Chair, the A6 amendment addresses the question of an independent audit of the agencies that are maintaining the data and holding the data that's obtained through the license plate readers. This was in particular a suggestion from Minkoji, there's some clarification of the language in there, and I will also note that we changed from a biennial to a triennial audit. Now, that was just my own instinct as to not wanting to have too frequent an audit, but I'm certainly comfortable, you know, if the committee preferred biennial rather than triennial as well. It seems to me the likelihood of an audit coming down the road, whether it's every 2 or 3 years, it still serves the same purpose to incentivize the agency to be careful about how they're handling the data. But whatever the committee's preferences on that is fine with me.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Latz, I'm trying to get a picture of what the independent audit agency would be auditing. I could imagine that if you had a license plate reader on one squad car driving around in a rural area, there may be very little information when compared to, let's say, a license plate reader on 35W in downtown Minneapolis. And so a triennial audit period would be quite a bit different for either community when compared together. And so goes back to my question, what are we auditing? I don't know what one would audit. Would it be the way data is retained, or is it the actual report itself that gets dropped into a computer? And could you explain or expand on what the audit would actually audit?
Sure.
Senator Lentz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Limmer, I think the audit would cover, you know, a kind of a wide range of things. You know, how the data is obtained, how it's maintained electronically, what safeguards are in place to guarantee that only those that have access to it get the access. It would look at the trail of access to make sure that only those who are authorized had that access. You can see patterns in access and so on. You know, there are a number of requirements for approvals for access to data. And then the retention period of time would also be reviewed to make sure it was complied with. So I think this is sort of the public accountability part of it, rather than just waiting for, you know, some whistleblower to come forward and say, I know that so-and-so shouldn't have had access to it, but I saw him snooping around in it the other day after hours. You know, that's it's good to have some independent oversight, and that's the other change in this amendment. In the previous bill, or in the bill in its current form, it has the local agency auditing itself. And I think in order to maintain the public confidence in the integrity of the system, if you will, it'd be important to have an independent outside auditor conducting that review. And I didn't want to get any more specific than simply to specify that it be independent.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
My concern, Senator Latz, might be whether or not I understand your logic on questioning whether an agency should audit itself. But is it that far removed when the public agency is hiring an agent to audit? Is it really that far afield or that separated when the audit company is being paid or contracted by the public agency, their client? Is it really as separate as we would want?
Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, maybe not as separate as we would want, but I'm not sure that there's a better alternative. The original bill had the BCA conducting the audit, but the BCA indicated, the Department of Public Safety, that they do not have the expertise in all of the different computer programs and systems that are used at the local levels to be able to do that effectively. I think it's at least there's some contractual obligation if you're hired as an outside auditor, to conduct it in a professional manner. Anytime government contracts with another entity, you run into that question of who's paying the freight. But I think private companies hire outside accounting agencies to audit their bookkeeping systems and accounting systems as well. You know, their practice typically is every several rounds of audits they change auditors. But I'm not sure I'm prepared to mandate that at this point. We do the best that we can, I think, with what we've got.
Senator Limmer.
Sir Lutz, just maybe an alternative idea to kick around here is if one would employ the BCA to conduct the hiring of an audit firm to do the auditing. That way you might have the separation that I would feel comfortable with and satisfy the technical aspect of the audit function by giving them direction to hire audit for the audit purpose. Of course, that triggers a funding issue, and I don't know if one would charge it to the public agency. They would be paying it originally anyway, but it would satisfy my desire to have at least a one clear step away from the actual public agency that was collecting the data. Just kicking it out for your reaction.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you. I'm not going to get into the if it's the right thing to do, but I do believe, and I was looking around the room, but I don't see anybody, but somebody might know, right now I believe like Hennepin County, so the auditor, state auditor audits several of the local communities, but I believe some communities actually hire out. I believe Hennepin County, I know, hires their own auditor. I don't believe they have to file that report with the state auditor, but there are some local government entities right now that hire out an auditor already, and so I'm not going to get into merits of that, but there are local governments that do that, and so it's already in place in some places, and so far it's working. I just wanted to share that info.
Yeah. So those are the financial audits.
Right. But they
Madam
hire
Chair,
the
But
auditor.
The idea of contracting out is not one that's unprecedented in Minnesota. I'll note that the Department of Public Safety came to us and requested to be taken out of the auditing loop, if you will. I'm not sure, if they were thinking going quite in the range of what you're suggesting, Senator Limmer. But I'd be reluctant to add them back into the loop, at least without seeing if that's something they'd be comfortable doing.
Senator Letts, any other questions on this amendment, A6?
I move the A6 amendment.
Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Senator Letts has the A7 amendment.
Yes, please.
And Senator Letts.
Madam Chair, the A7 amendment would codify some of the suggestion from the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association. It has to do with non-hit access to the database. So if there's not already a license plate that the law enforcement is looking for at the time the data is gathered, but then while the data is maintained, they find a license plate number they'd like to run against the database, then the question is, what access do they have to the database? And in the bill that we already have in the first engrossment, there are some protections. The person that's accessing the data has to have approval from the head of their law enforcement agency or his or her designee, I believe is the language, before they can go ahead and access the database to do that search. There has to be a legitimate and specified law enforcement purpose for that access to the database. What this amendment, A7, ads is a requirement that there be reasonable suspicion that the data they're accessing is pertinent to a criminal investigation. And the request for the access must include a record of the factual basis for that request, an associated case number or complaint or incident. And finally, it specifies that sharing of data with another law enforcement agency is only permissible if the other agency also complies with the requirements of this paragraph, has the same protections for access to the data. So those additional two pieces are put in there. This would be instead of, this whole provision would be instead of imposing a warrant requirement or a court order requirement for every time a law enforcement agency wanted to search the database, which it seems to me would get a little cumbersome as a practical matter for investigative purposes. Since the data is already collected and it's in the hands of the law enforcement agency already. And, you know, frankly, when you've got, if you're driving around, it's public. You know, your license plate is publicly exposed at that point anyway, and there's no warrant requirement, you know, for a law enforcement officer to look out his or her squad car window and write down the license plate number and then, you know, try to run it against the system. So I'm not quite as comfortable with the notion of requiring a warrant at that stage in the process, but they're having some threshold, a reasonable suspicion, and the other protections in there, I think, address some of those concerns.
Questions, members? Senator Newman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. A7 amendment strikes me as being an improvement to the bill, particularly in view of the fact that the record of the factual basis has to accompany the request. I think that's good. My question for Senate counsel is the interpretation of the language reasonable suspicion. Reasonable suspicion to a lot of folks could be just an educated guess or maybe a hunch coupled with a lot of experience. Is there, you know, in law a definition of reasonable suspicion or reasonable basis? Or is reasonable suspicion, as used in this amendment, open to interpretation?
Madam Chair, Senator Newman, I think there is some case law on it. I think, as you articulated, it's obviously something less than, like, probable cause. I'm thinking back to the law school, it was Terry v. Ohio case or something that involved a stop on the street that I think reasonable suspicion might have been a standard in there. So I think there are some cases that kind of articulate what it is. Off the top of my head, I can't give you a textbook definition or whatever. So.
Nor can I, and that's why I asked. And I apologize if I put you on the spot.
Madam Chair?
Senator Latz.
To that point, you know, there is a standard for the stop, which is articulable suspicion, which in Minnesota case law and I think in national case law as well, is basically anything more than mere whim, caprice, or idle curiosity. Just a random decision to search the database and see what comes up, you know, would not be allowed. They need something more, and I would say something more than just an articulable suspicion, which is required for a stop of a motor vehicle, for example. You'd need not only need to articulate it, but that what is articulated would need to have a reasonable basis.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Somebody else have a question? Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Latz, could you tell me, how tough is it to get a warrant for something like this? Is it a phone call away?
Madam Chair, I think it probably depends on where your jurisdiction is. But sometimes under certain circumstances, warrants can be granted over the phone. But usually a warrant request is accompanied by an affidavit from the law enforcement officer articulating probable cause, which is the standard for a warrant. The probable cause, the reasonable belief that criminal activity was going on, and that the information they're seeking in the warrant would be necessary or helpful to investigating the crime, and then you've got a little longer process. It could be an hour, it could be several hours, and it depends on the kind of investigation also. But, you know, law enforcement right now, they search databases all the time looking for information. And, you know, if we're only going to be happening once a week, you know, in any particular jurisdiction, it might not be such a big deal to request a warrant unless there is an exigent circumstances justifying a non-warrant type of search. But when it happens more frequently as part of a general investigation, it seems to me it gets more, as a practical matter, more research, resource-consuming, less practical to do it over and over and over again. And so I recognize the importance of having the protections in place, but requiring the law enforcement, every time they want to search the database, to go through the process of getting a judge to approve it, I think is a little more cumbersome.
Madam Chair?
Senator Hall.
Senator Letts, help me. Am I envisioning this correctly? There's a let's take a murder in Burnsville. And at that point, Burnsville PD can just go to the database, you know, getting there the right way. But, I mean, they can just throw it out and say, was this car ever hit on, whether it be a stationary, whether it be a movable scanner? Was that car hit on at all? Can they do that, and would that be the way it would normally be used? I mean, I would think I would want to do that, to find out if that car were in the vicinity, if we think that person is a possible suspect.
Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, I think, well, the answer would be that they can access, you know, information now. And under certain circumstances, under most circumstances, you have to get a warrant before you can do a search. But there are some specific recognized exceptions to the warrant requirement, including emergencies. So if you've got an unfolding crime scene and you think you've got a vehicle that's dashing away from the crime scene, you need to have information immediately. You don't think you can even wait the hour or however long it would take to get a judge to formally approve it. You know, maybe you'd qualify in the emergency exception to the warrant requirement, and then you've got that judgment call to make. On the other hand, you could end up in litigation over that very question in any ensuing criminal charges, in which the defendant would say there wasn't an emergency or this didn't qualify for an exception to the warrant requirement, and therefore the Constitution was violated and the evidence that was obtained ought to be suppressed as a result. So, I mean, it ends up being a judgment call in any particular case, subject to review by the courts for those standards.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hall.
Senator Latz, I'm sorry. I'm past the warrant, need for warrant. I'm just wondering if that's the way they're going to be used. If it were me, I would want to enter that into a statewide base. If I'm out of Stillwater, I'd want to enter that into two statewide base to see where that car may be, or the owner that we suspect, where his car, if it was ever hit anyplace. So I'm just wondering how wide and how far does this expand and how it will be used on a regular basis.
Madam Chair, Senator Hall,
Matt.
I would anticipate that local agencies will enter into cooperative agreements, at least with nearby agencies, to be able to share the information between those agencies, subject to the requirements of the law. I believe that the bill prohibits a formal creation of a statewide database.
Okay.
Any other questions, Member Senator Sharon?
I'm just thinking about this, the questions that are being asked, Senator Latz, and I'm wondering if I'm correct in saying that the A6 amendment that establishes that I think is the triennial audit now, which will be to make certain that the system is in compliance with what you have articulated in this legislation. So that's what's in the audit. But to whom does the audit go? And will the audit, now in relationship to this, track whether or not the data sharing is occurring as you intend in this legislation. I'm assuming, and I think it's articulated well enough here to not change anything, that the audit will include a review of this function that you're indicating under A7, and once it's added. But what's not clear to me is once the audit is completed, where does it go, so that if it reflects a violation of what we have intended, that outside of the bureaus itself, that there is an action likely to be taken.
Senator Sheeran, Ms. Patan, is there something in here?
Her.
She Ms. Pontius? Ms. Pontius, thank you.
Madam Chair, Senator Sheeran, if you look on the unofficial engrossment on lines 220 and 221, it refers to the audit verifying compliance with paragraph F. That, in turn, is all of this kind of language. So that's the language about who has access, and the amendment language also is going in paragraph F. So that will be part of the audit.
I'm glad to hear that affirmation. I drew that conclusion by seeing where this was going to be located in the bill. But what's not clear to me is once the audit is completed, who receives the audit? It doesn't say anything in here that it goes to the chairs of the Judiciary Committee, or is there...
Please, no. Madam Chair...
To Ms. Pontius?
Sharon, line 2.22 does say the summary results of the audit are public.
Are public, okay.
So I suppose anyone who requested it could get a copy of it.
And there are groups that are monitoring this closely, so...
Indeed, there are.
Any other questions, members, on A7? If not,
I move the A7 amendment.
Senator Latz moves the A7 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Now, Senator Latz on the A8 amendment.
So, Madam Chair, the A8 amendment addresses a question that arose about the access to the data by the subject, the defendant in a criminal action resulting from the use of the data or an incident involving the data. And it actually gives the defendant an opportunity to make a request for access to the data and that the data be preserved for longer than the 90-day retention period so that they might be able to use it for exculpatory purposes. So, for example, if they're accused of being at a crime scene and have become a suspect or a defendant, and they believe that the data might show that, in fact, their vehicle wasn't anywhere near the crime scene, but they're not sure they can, you know, get to that information within the 90-day retention period, they can immediately put in a request as soon as they're charged with the data, with the law enforcement agency, that the data not be destroyed, so that they have an opportunity to see if there is helpful information in that data for them. This was at the request of some representatives from the defense bar. I hope I articulated that.
Yes,
clearly.
That's easy to understand. Senator Huff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Latz, then, explain how that would work. Somebody's accused of something, a month after an event. And how do they know that their car has been scanned or is in the database? And then you're having them, if they figure that out, that it's in the database, you have them hold it if the amount of time is 90 days until the court proceeding is over, or are you just holding all data in case they're in the database? You know what I'm asking?
Madam Chair, Senator Hall.
Senator Letts.
This isn't the perfect way to do it. Sometimes criminal charges aren't brought until after 90 days have passed.
Yeah.
And then the data might already have been destroyed. But usually by that point, an individual knows if they're being suspected of something. So they might be smart to try to preserve what data they might have. It's probably they can request all the data, and I suppose they could specify in their request what range of the data they'd like to have preserved for them to be able to look for exculpatory evidence. I mean, if it's the entire database that was existing, on the date of the incident that occurred, that will be held for a longer period of time. That may be the request, and I think this provision would allow or require then the law enforcement agency to hold on to that batch of data until the criminal case is resolved or dismissed.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Latz, if they hold on to that data and they're using it in the defense, can the prosecutors also use that data if it's being held on longer than 90 days or whatever that date might be?
Anybody can.
Madam Chair, I don't see anything in the bill or the amendment that would prohibit that.
Okay.
It's a matter of just making sure that the data is not destroyed before a defendant has an opportunity to look for it and see if there's exculpatory data in there.
Senator Newman.
Madam Chair, Senator Lance, the idea of retaining the exculpatory evidence strikes me as being a good idea, but I would, I might be wrong here, it seems like all of the data will be retained, and if someone who is charged or under investigation for a criminal act then has access to it, do we suddenly lose control of it, and individual accused of a crime could use it for purposes other than intended? In other words, it gets out to the public. Do we lose control of it under this amendment? Because law enforcement no longer is retained.
Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, Senator Newman, I think law enforcement still retains the data. I think it's just a matter of access to it by representative from the defendant. But I'd ask if Ms. Pontius maybe address that too.
Ms. Pontius?
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, I think that would be true. I mean, then it would depend on the classification of the data, and then you have the rules in terms of if there's actual court proceeding when you can discover it if it's not public. So the classification protections would still be there.
Okay, any other questions, members? If not, Senator Latz moves the A8 amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Latz on the A9 amendment.
Madam Chair, members, this is basically a technical clarification amendment. Ask Ms. Pontius to clarify if there's anything further on that.
Questions, members? Senator Dziczek?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So on line 1.6 of the amendment, so could you just explain how this works? Because currently local agencies, the local responsible authority, will say where they'll determine if it's security information under 13.37. And then could you explain how this would work? Are they going to share that information then with the BCA, or how is the BCA going to be able to determine, or are people going to be going to them to ask why is this security information, and are they going to be able to state why, or are they going to send them back to the local people?
Senator Latz.
I'm going to ask Ms. Pontius to
address
that.
Ms. Pontius.
Madam Chair and Senator Dziczek, this is actually, if you look on page 3, this is sort of the exception to when the BCA's list is accessible to the public. So what I would see happening is that a local law enforcement agency might submit a list of locations to the BCA, but say, this particular location we think is security information. And then it would be up to the BCA to actually make that determination. And then if it was, then it would not be accessible to the public and posted on the web. Because there's a general law that classifies security information.
Mm-hmm. But is it the local? Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it the local authority that is making that determination, or are you asking BCA to make that determination? Because do they have the background material? So is it in practicality going to be that except to the extent that the Bureau, upon request from the responsible authority, makes the location security or lists the location as security information? Because are they going to have the information to make that determination? And that's my question. Or is that, are they just going to, is the local authority going to just tell them, we have classified this as security information under here, and we're going to ask you to not list that location based on we've made that classification?
Ms. Pines.
Madam Chair and Senator Dees, the way I read the language is it's ultimately the BCA that makes that determination. The local entity will ask them to do it and probably provide them with, you know, documentation or whatever. But if you look on the amendment on line 6, it's the BCA, upon request, determines that it's security information, where the general rule normally would be the local entity would just say, this is security information, therefore it's private or non-public. So that's the intent.
Madam Chair, I believe the BCA is here. Can we ask them if that's something that they are, they feel that they can do, or is it going to be problematic because they don't have the information?
Please come to the microphone and state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Drew Evans. I'm the Assistant Superintendent at the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. I think the discussion that the senators had with the council is exactly what our concern would be, not that we necessarily oppose this amendment, but that we wouldn't necessarily have the background information. Security information declarations are typically done at the local level by the individuals and the entities that have all of the information available to them to make that determination. And I would have some concerns about whether we have all the information available to us at the BCA, the background, the need in the community, why they're making that determination, to be able to make an adequate determination at the BCA.
Any further questions?
Chair. Madam Chair, while we have the representative from the BCA here, I had a question. The way I've always understood it is that the BCA works upon the request and collaboration of a local police department in things like investigations and other law enforcement matters. The presumption is you're there to further enhance the efforts of a local police department. You would be put in a different position if this passes, then you would be the sole arbiter to decide yes or no. And how likely do you think that'll be that the BCA would say no when they're trained almost entirely since their beginning to help law enforcement go in a proactive effort? Now you become the judge and jury on a particular aspect of this policy.
Mr. Drew?
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, you do know correctly that the mission of the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension is to assist our local law enforcement and the criminal justice system throughout the state of Minnesota. I think we certainly would interpret the law with the information that we've been given, and we would make the proper determination under the law given that. So it would be difficult for me to answer how often we would disagree with our local law enforcement partners, but we would certainly hold true to the law.
Well, Madam
Senator
Chair,
Limmer?
The question or maybe the observation I'm trying to make is, I'm not sure if the law is as black and white as what we would hope it would be in this aspect. And I'm unsure if an agency that's sole message is to help local law enforcement would be an independently minded enough to say no to the very same mission that is theirs from the very beginning. And then they become the ones that say, I'm sorry, the location of that specific reader, we don't think is security information. I don't know how you would make that judgment. I think it puts you in a very difficult position.
Mr. Drew, sure. Senator Latz.
I think the alternative is to allow the local law enforcement agency to make its own determination of which specific reader location is security information. And I don't know where the accountability is under current law for a determination like that. And maybe counsel can help me understand that, too. But I recognize the concern that, you know, has been raised about having the Bureau responsible for reviewing this. And so I would assume there's some process already in place where if security information is already identified in the Data Practices Act, and there must be some accountability mechanism in there for reviewing, you know, when there's some question as to whether that determination has been made properly.
Madam Chair, the amendment goes in the direction that I'd like to go. I just don't know if it goes far enough, and I'm...
You mean as, Madam Chair,
Senator Latz.
Senator, let me, you mean as to who would review or make the decision as to whether it's
That's
security
correct.
Information?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure you'd want to have some outside independent organization making that decision. I don't know if the Bureau is the best place to make that decision either, and they obviously have some concerns about being capable of making that decision also, because the information they would receive would be, you know, from the local agency as well. And so maybe I should ask the question, Ms. Pontius, what oversight or public accountability is in the Data Practices Act now to review determinations that information is security information?
Ms. Pontius?
Madam Chair and Senator Last, right now it's the responsible authority that's maintaining the data that makes that determination. So I think part of the intent of, behind this amendment is to sort of remove it at least one step from the law enforcement agency. They would make the request to the BCA, look, we think this is security information, but, you know, the BCA would make the final determination. There's a definition of security information in statute, which they'd have to follow. And then if somebody had an issue, you'd just go through the normal remedies process under the Data Practices Act. Beyond that, there's no formal process in terms of review. It's whoever's maintaining the data basically controls. They say, hey, this is security information. We're not going to release it.
And then,
Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, then any member of the public that wanted to question the appropriateness of that decision would go through the process outlined in the Data Practices Act to challenge that?
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, yeah, that's correct. I mean, they could ask for a commissioner's opinion. You know, they could maybe do more informal things, obviously court action, things like that as well. But basically, it would just be a general remedies issue then.
Okay. So then I think the question before the committee would be whether this determination is left in the hands of the local law enforcement agency, subject to the review generally in the Data Practices Act, or whether to have that determination shift to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, subject to that same kind of a public review. And, you know, if the BCA is uncomfortable having that responsibility, you know, I can understand that. I think I'd be comfortable either way with this, because we know that there is a mechanism already in place for the public to be able to question the determination.
Any other questions on the A9 amendment, members?
Is there any?
Senator Latz.
I'm pondering the question that's been raised as to whether maybe we ought to go back to the position that the local law enforcement agency make that determination themselves, and then they defend it themselves if it gets challenged.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, much like the discussion that we had on auditing, I feel more comfortable when there's at least one party removed from the actual authority auditing themselves. And when it comes to determining whether or not the information on a specific reader is security information or not, I feel more comfortable when it's removed from the specific authority. So you're going in the right direction on the A9. I might say it's not quite as far removed as I would like, but for lack of any other thing, I'd be in support of the A9 amendment.
Okay, members, if there's no other questions, Senator Latz moves the A9 amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Then we're on to the A10 amendment. Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, the A10 amendment specifies that the law enforcement agency must maintain an accessible list to the public of the list of fixed stationary license plate readers that are in use, in addition to sending it the information to the BCA. So they can't just send it and then destroy their own list. They've got to keep their own list, too, that's accessible to the public. So a member of the public could go directly to a city's police department, or they could contact the BCA. Either way, to get access to the list of stationary readers. And this is in response to the discussion that addressed this very topic at the last committee hearing.
Senator Latz, would you want to say updated or current list? Just because a list is a list, but it might be 5 or 10 years old. And they might have changed.
A current list?
Current or updated, either one.
I'd ask Ms. Pontius to give some guidance on the best language there.
Yes.
In front of list, put Ms. Pontius, does it make sense to put either updated or current, just current. So that's not... Okay.
Current?
Current.
I'm comfortable with current.
Okay.
So I'll incorporate that into the A-10 amendment on line 2 after... A, insert, current.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Nimmer?
Madam Chair, just a question that comes up from time to time on data privacy issues is, in the event that the local enforcement agency failed to do that, is there any consequence if they did not maintain a current list for the public to see? Have we thought of that? Would it be subject to a liability claim, or would it be, I don't know how you would hold the agency accountable if they intentionally failed to keep a location list public?
Well, this whole bill is part of the Data Practices Act, so all of the existing accountability mechanisms for that act would be available in addition to the public embarrassment. Okay. Failing to comply with the law as a law enforcement agency.
All right.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. If not, Senator Latz moves the A-10 amendment as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Latz, A-11.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There was some question that was raised at the last hearing about how to handle the constant advancement of technology. And this amendment is intended to address that, at least so that there is public disclosure of any technology enhancements that are used.
Questions, members? Seeing none, Senator Latz moves the A-11 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. On to A-12.
Madam Chair, the A-12 amendment clarifies in a definition of what data is regulated as relation to whether the reader and the data is gathered by a non-governmental entity, but it ends up being shared with the law enforcement agency. So this is kind of the Mall of America example that was in use, where the readers are owned by the mall, but the data is shared directly with the Bloomington Police Department. So within the definition of the automated license plate reader is included that kind of a situation, and that makes it then subject to all the protections that are in the rest of the bill.
Questions, members? Seeing none. Senator Latz moves the A-12 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Then we're on to the final, the A-13 amendment. Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, the A-13 amendment makes clear that a law enforcement agency that does not comply with these provisions is not allowed to use a license plate reader.
What if they do?
Any questions on that? Members?
I'm sure.
Senator Limmer.
Would this amendment actually be necessary?
I'd rather not imply it, Senator Limmer.
All right.
I'd rather it be clear. And I will note, this does apply to the subdivision on page 3, line 16, the subdivision dealing with agency policies that are required. So... the local agency would have to establish their own policy governing license plate readers that are identical or substantially similar to the post board developed model policy. And then if the agency doesn't comply with developing their own policy, then they simply can't use the license plate reader. it's clear there's no question or wiggle room to get out of it. They have to adopt it if they want to use it.
Members? Okay, the A3rd, Senator Latz moves the A13 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Then Senator Latz, I'm going to see if anybody from the audience wants to come up and talk on any of these amendments at this point. A for or against? Okay, I guess that's it. Then Mr. Gemberly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Don Gemberling from the Coalition on Government Information. When I got here, I collected all the amendments, and I read them all, and I said, this process really does work. People listen. Lots and lots of improvements. So as I think I've told you about COGI, our shtick, as it were, is keeping government accountable through transparency and access to government information. And that's what these amendments have done, with some exceptions, and I'll note those to see if you want to do anything with them. I'm concerned that it says that when you do the audit, the summary results of the audit are public. But there's no definition of summary. So in the instance where somebody is doing something that they shouldn't be doing, will the audit, which is actually done, identify that? But would a summary of the audit then identify that? So, you know, part of my experience in working in the government and for the last few years outside of the government is how our government works to use every possible way to avoid legislative intent when they don't like that intent, okay? And this is one of those small opportunities. If you want the audit to really tell people what's happening, then the whole audit ought to be public, okay? The discussion of location information as security information. One of the trends we're seeing is that security information is being increasingly used to make information that you've said is explicitly public, not public.
Data goes there and never comes
out. I tend to disagree with that based on the simple Statutory Interpretation Act that says when you say something specific, that's what controls. The security information definition is, I can't remember how many words, but it's a lot of words. Okay, and as you've discussed, challenging it really means you have to go to court. You can get IPAD opinions, but generally what the IPAD opinions have said historically is because this is such a detailed call that the commissioner will essentially respect somebody saying something is security information. Okay, let me give you an example. If you say that location as reported to the BCA isn't public, then how about setting up a license plate reader at a location where you know that the folks from Black Lives Matters are going to meet? And later on somebody says, well, wait a minute, aren't you just picking on one group? And so somebody asks, was there a license plate reader at that location? And the response is, no, that's security information, we can't tell you. You know, we've been saying all along that where these things are deployed is very important to understanding all kinds of possible cultural and other kinds of issues, okay? Part of what I find interesting is that if you look at them physically, and this is based on seeing them outside and on testimony by law enforcement, it's pretty obvious what they are, okay? If you follow a St. Paul police car that has two boxes on the trunk, that's what they are, okay? I think Minneapolis said they often deploy them on trailers. So what I'm thinking is the only way you would want this to security information to cover it is if you're going to deploy something that's camouflage, that doesn't look like a normal license plate reader. And then I think that raises the issue on government surveillance, okay? Lastly, the small amendment you made about a current list of the uses and locations, et cetera. Again, by saying current, do you get yourself into a situation where somebody comes in and says, I want to see what you did with this thing a month ago? And the response is, well, we only have to maintain a current list, and a month ago isn't current. Okay? I see Senator Newman chuckling, but understand, I've spent immense amounts of my life listening to people make the strangest arguments under the Data Practices Act, okay? And the problem with that is, if you want to challenge that strange argument, by and large, what you have to do is go to court. And there's enough lawyers in the room to know what that means. So, other than that, I applaud Senator Latz. Good amendments. So, thank you. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, Mr. Gimberling, one of the biggest debate points we've discussed in the committee and ever since last year was the retainage days of non-hit data. And the bill still retains a 90-day standard for law enforcement to hold of data that's not a hit data, it's just background data. Do you have any opinion of the 90-day retainage?
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, you know, Min Koji,
Mr. Gamberling,
officially the board voted to support a no retention for non-hit data, okay? Remember, when somebody decides in law enforcement whether or not there's been a hit, okay, now you've kind of provided some parameters for that now with some of the amendments that were done, which is good, okay? But when you have a hit, then you keep the data for as long as you want to keep it, subject to the records management statute, okay?
And Madam Chair,
Senator
Limmer, I can just make a comment. I know that last year in the other part of the building, they passed a bill that went to conference committee representing 0 days, and that's what stymied the conference committee, and nothing got done. And the Senate and House created just last session a commission to study data practices. They studied this issue and recommended a 0-day retainage of this type of data. So I think it's important for us to recognize the desire of both chambers in passing the allowance of having a commission study these issues in detail. And I know they've, in some respects, through letters and other things, they've given all of us information and direction of where they came to conclusions after months of study.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I guess we have one more person that would like to testify.
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record.
Hi, y'all. My name is Richard Dion. Thank you for your time. I think, by the way, you've done a really good job of trying to tighten up this bill. But looking at the amendments, I'd like to back up just a little bit, if I may. And I apologize, I missed the first meeting. I was given bad information. By using the license plate readers, in many senses, we're doing nothing but stacking up a bunch of individuals, citizens, on the street, in a line.
That's what you're doing.
Coming up to a police officer as he runs each one to find out if there's anything that they're wanted for or anything they've done bad. Obviously, this is done without their knowledge, a license plate reader, and stacking them up on the street, of course, is done with their knowledge. And I question whether we would stack them up on the street and still be having this meeting, even with the good amendments that have been brought about. With that in mind, given pretty much the conclusion that this law is going to be passed, I'm kind of against license plate readers because of that reason that I've given. It's no different. That I believe that there should be zero retention, because by maintaining retention, all we're doing is saying, well, yeah, but we might need to get you later. So not only are we taking a citizen out of nowhere and running them against data, do we need to arrest you, then there's no probable cause. But we're retaining it in case we need to arrest you later. in case you make a mistake later. And I'm just looking at that as something I think is clear. And if we do pass all this, then we should pass it with those things in mind, that that's what we're doing. And that's all the time I want to take. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deanna. Is there anyone else in the audience? Seeing none.
Madam Chair.
Senator Latz.
I'd like to perhaps address a couple of the points that were raised. One is with regard to the language adopted in the A-10 amendment about the list of the locations of fixed readers and whether it's a current list would include, say, the past, some period in the past also accessible to the public. And I think that's a fair point to be made. And I've been trying to come up with some language that might require the law enforcement agency at least to keep a public list of the previous 12 months of where the stationary readers were located. Because I think that would be a beneficial change to that. And so I've got an idea for language. Maybe Ms. Pontius could comment on it as well. But if we went back to the A-10 amendment on line 1.5, and if after the word agency inserted currently and in the prior 12 months, that might address that concern, if the committee were to agree with that.
Okay, so Ms. Pontius, do you want to comment on that? You want to remove the word current in front of a list, first
correct,
of all.
Yes.
And then you want to add after agency, current and prior 12 months, correct?
Yes. Currently and in the prior 12 months. There might be an easier way or better way to draft it. It doesn't hang perfectly grammatically, but on the fly.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dietzick.
I was working on the same language. I don't know if this helps, but on 1.4, you could do maintain a list of the current and previous past locations, including the date at that location of any fixed stationary automated legislative reader.
Could you say that a little louder, Senator
Dietzick? Thank you. Maintain a list of the current and previous past locations, including dates at that location of any fixed stationary. Again, I don't know if it's grammatically correct, but you'd have to maintain the current location, and then it goes beyond 12 months, but you just have to keep, okay, so from August 1st to November 15th, it was at this location. Then we moved it, and so for the next 10 months, it's at that location. So it goes beyond the 12 months. I don't know if that's helpful or not. I don't know if it's grammatically correct.
Ms. Pontius?
Madam Chair and members, yeah, I'm almost inclined just to delete current there. The only thing I'd point out is the bill. What this language was intended to do is just clarify that this is an additional requirement to what the BCA is supposed to do. If you look at their language that's in the bill right now, on the unofficial engrossment on page 2 at the bottom there, it just says the Bureau must maintain a list of agencies using the readers, including the location. So there's no current or that kind of language there. So I think one way or the other, you probably want them to be consistent.
Well, I like the idea of, and it's not hard to, given the amount of data that's involved, I don't think it's too hard to keep a list going back, you know, from the inception of the program of the stationary locations and when they change as well.
Okay, so what is the answer here?
Well, we could use Senator Dietz's language or something Ms. Pontius suggests to clarify that if necessary.
Senator Newman.
Just a question. Thank you, Madam Chair. We are now talking about a minimum period of time to keep a list. Would we be allowing law enforcement to delete a list that should be included in the triennial audit? In other words, should we require the list to be kept for at least 3 years because it would be included in the audit?
Madam Chair, if we address Senator Dietzick's language, there's no time limit going back, so the list would exist in perpetuity.
Okay. Does somebody want to read Senator Deed's Sixth Amendment again so we know what we're voting on here? Do you want to repeat
it? I can repeat
time?
My suggestion. I don't know if it's grammatically correct. So on line 1-4, it would be maintain a list of the current and previous past locations, or just previous locations, including dates at that location.
Current, how about if we say current and previous locations? Rather than, I think that's better grammatically. Current and previous locations, and then what?
Including dates at that location.
Including dates. Dates at that location?
Yeah, so if they, you know, if they had it here for, you know, the previous year, it'll tell you the dates it was at that location.
Oh. Does that work?
Yes.
Senate Council says that works.
Yeah.
So,
or just date and location.
Okay. And does anybody have a question, members? Okay, seeing none, Senator Latz moves to have an oral amendment to the A-10 amendment to delete current after A on line 1.4 and to insert a list of the current and previous locations, including dates at that location or at those locations. What's more?
Those,
date at those locations. Okay. Okay, so Senator Latz moves that amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? No. Motion carries. Oh, I didn't mean no. I meant I voted yes.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Latz.
I'm also sensitive to the comment that was made about the question of summary results of the audit being public and whether the summary would include areas in which there was noncompliance with the requirements on line 2.22. And honestly, I'm not entirely clear what the purpose was of requiring only summary results of the audit to be public rather than complete results of the audit to be public. I'd be interested in some suggestions on how to handle that, where that came from.
Ms. Pontius?
Madam Chair, certainly. I suspect the intent was, to the extent that there might be like not public data in the audit, but I'm assuming it's going to be all public data that'll be in there. I suppose you could say the results of the audit, normally the audit would be public. So there's that. So in a way, you don't need that sentence there at all, in which case it would be public unless there were data that were classified otherwise in there, but they wouldn't be getting into that level of detail. I think that it was originally put in there as kind of comfort language for people.
I'm not a big fan of comfort language because it creates redundancies in the statute, but if we were going to have something, we could simply say results of the audit are public.
I support that.
Delete summary.
Take out, that would help too.
Okay, could we read the amendment now?
Oh, Madam Chair, I think it would just be on page 2, line 22, just delete summary of, and just say the result summary, and then just say the results of the audit are public.
Okay, anybody have comments? Okay. Senator Hall moves that, and all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Any other, Senator Latz, would you like to wrap up your bill at this point?
Thank you. Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. I wasn't on the commission that was created to meet. My understanding is that there wasn't a lot of formal action that was taken or written decisions or analysis in that regard. I appreciate all the work that they did. I will also note that last year the Senate as a whole body unanimously passed a bill that contained a 90-day retention period. And it would be my hope and intent to renew that Senate position this year. and return us with the improvements in the bill to the conference table with the House so that we can try to create law this year. So I ask for your support to reaffirm the Senate's position from last year with the improvements that we've made and to pass the bill as amended. So with those comments, I move that Senate File 86 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Senate floor.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
I'd like to amend the motion to recommend to pass but go to the Senate Transportation and Public Safety Committee, where I believe the chairman requested the bill to go to. I haven't been privy to any other communication from Senator Dibble, but I believe he has made it well known that he wanted to see the bill in his committee.
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Latz.
I think each member of this committee received a copy of the letter that I delivered to Senator Dibble today outlining. Is that not the case?
I didn't. Yes. I haven't seen it.
I should ask staff if it was in fact distributed.
It was distributed. Members, that was left with your LAs. That's how I got my copy. So your LAs should have it if you don't.
I can explain what was in the letter, members. I know that Senator Dibble requested the bill. He did not request the bill last year. It went straight from Judiciary Committee to the floor last year, and there was no question about the jurisdiction. This is, in its whole, a data practices bill. It's not about the use of the data or changing the data that is maintained by the Department of Public Safety, which is the basis for the jurisdiction of the Transportation and Public Safety Committee. It is about data that is developed and maintained at the local law enforcement level and the questions surrounding the use and its role in Chapter 13, the Data Practices Act. It's my belief, and I've consulted with counsel on this as well, that there is no jurisdiction in the Transportation and Public Safety Committee. I'm loath to set a precedent of referring data practices issues to a different committee. So I would respectfully object to Senator Limmer's proposed amendment to the motion.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, as we've put this bill together, it clearly recognizes the administrative function of law enforcement, the process of investigating crimes based on information that's collected. Yes, it does have a primary focus on data privacy, but we cannot ignore the duties of law enforcement, the administration of law enforcement, as well as the equipment that may be on or near the roadsides of Minnesota, which would clearly be in the jurisdiction of our Transportation and Public Safety Committee. And that's the reason why I think it's appropriate to send it there. We'll let the committee make its decision.
Okay, members, are we ready to vote on that amendment?
May I ask a question?
Senator Sheeran.
I think there's another recourse for Senator Dibble if he chose to exercise it correct, which is to take that the failure to refer to his committee to the Rules Committee for reexamination. So I think that since the process is in place, should he choose to exercise it after receiving your communication, then I'll be comfortable supporting the author of the bill.
All right. Members in favor of Senator Limmer's amendment, say aye.
Aye.
No, excuse me.
Yes. Should we do that again? Members in favor of supporting Senator Limmer's amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Okay, so now we're going to vote on the whole bill as amended. And Senator Letts has already made the motion to
Chair.
On the bill as amended in committee today. And I guess we have a couple questions.
Just a couple comments on the bill. We finally now reached the point where we're going to be, you know, voting on the bill. First of all, I want to thank Senator Letts for
you know, agreeing to laying this bill on the table and giving us some time to think about it. And I think it was a wise decision on his part. If, you know, the number of amendments that have been generated and passed since last week is evidence of that. And so I want Senator Latz to know that I really do appreciate that fact.
Thank you. I'm glad this is on the record.
I'm very aware of that, Senator. I took the opportunity to, you know, since last week and over the weekend, I have, you know, reread the bill with the amendments that we put on last week. I've taken the opportunity to talk to some of my local law enforcement folks, including the chief of police in my hometown. I spent about 2 hours with him on this bill Monday morning. I've looked at a number of newspaper articles, and while I recognize that this issue of the license plate reader has been around for a while, I still have a lot of concerns about principally the data retention. That's where I get hung up. I have absolutely no problem with the license plate reader where there is a hit on someone who has an outstanding warrant, the car is stolen, the plates are stolen. I think that's just a good law enforcement tool. We did discuss last week the philosophical issues, and I'm not going to rehash them except to say that I do find troublesome the fact that we will retain private data on citizens who haven't done anything wrong. And we could discuss that for the rest of the afternoon, not come to an agreement, but I think it is a genuine, legitimate, philosophical argument and difference that we may have. But more importantly than, as of right now, the physical or philosophical issue is a much more practical issue when it comes to the data retention of that private information on our private citizens that haven't done anything wrong. And I think that really comes down to me is that law enforcement in this bill is making a promise to us that with all of their good intentions, I don't think they can fulfill that promise, not through any fault of their own. But I think that we live in an age where our private data is a lot less secure than it was, say, 50 years ago. And I think it's less secure where we are asking the government to retain data on us from two different sources. One is external hacking, and the other is internal mischief. External hacking is a matter of fact. You know, you have to look no farther than Sony or Target or any number of things, any number of examples, and they're happening to us all the time. I just read one again today. Since we adjourned last week, I think I've read two more stories about external hacking. And I just don't think that we can ignore it. But even more problematic is the internal mischief by employees who have access to the data. And you may or may not believe this, but I just did a real quick look, and I'd be happy to share this list with anyone that wants to look at it. But internal mischief is a lot more prevalent than external hacking. And I was surprised by that. And probably the most famous one is Snowden. Whether you think he's a traitor or a hero really is irrelevant for purposes of this argument. The point is that he was an insider and is now using information that he has gleaned for purposes that were not intended. Look only as far as our state is concerned, and we are replete with insider unlawful use of our private data by state agencies. We got a Metro Transit employee in 2014, 2011. We've got law enforcement employees accessing private individual records using DPS information. We've got driver and motor vehicle services database with thousands of accesses and misuse, to the point where Jim Noble says, quote, we have a real problem. DNR, our DNR, has an analyst who intentionally, wrongfully accessed private information on our citizens. I mean, the list just goes on and on. We've got, just this morning, I found government health care websites sending consumers' private personal data to private companies that specialize in advertising and analyzing internet data. It's happening every day. And whereas, and I am not a data practices expert. As a matter of fact, I've tried to avoid it. I mean, it's just
come to the right place.
Yeah. I'm doing a good job at it. But the point is that the point that I'm trying to make is that our law enforcement officers, our local law enforcement officers that have come here and testified, I believe that they are sincere. And I really think that they are trying to do the right thing to protect us from criminal activity. But I also believe that they are making us a promise that they simply do not have the ability to keep. Not that they don't want to. It's beyond their control. And so this is the conclusion that I have come to, is the data retention in this bill is the problem for me, not the license plate readers. And because I'm not real conversant in data practices, it seems to me that there's probably a whole bunch of us in the Senate that are not. What I would say, just as a suggestion, is strip the data retention portion of this bill out so you have your license plate readers. Put the data retention issue into a separate bill, or maybe even better, into the bill involving the Section 1 issues that Senator Latz deleted last week. Good conversation piece for us, where we are talking about data, capturing data and retaining data from things other than license plate readers, drones and cameras and, you know, Lord only knows what, technology we don't even know is out there. And then we'll have a conversation on data retention that is universal and that it's uniform when the government is going to retain data on our private lives, so that we don't have a policy on license plate retention and one that is going to be different from drones and one that's going to be different from camera. And I just, Senator Latz, I'm not trying to blow your bill up. I'm not trying to give you a hard time. But I would ask that you think about, strip this data retention issue out. Let's have a conversation on just data retention or data retention from all sources, so that in Minnesota we have a uniform policy just to handle that private data from that is gleaned from our citizens that literally have not done anything wrong. And while I recognize what you're trying to do here is have a compromise from, say, 180 days to 90 days, in my world, the way I'm looking at this, it is really the 90 days is really a compromise based on nothing. Nothing, I say, because we don't have a basis for retaining the information in the first place. To go from 180 days to 90 or 5 or whatever should really have some reasonable criteria. So I would prefer to see a bill that says you can't keep the data except in the following instances and then list the criteria. And we haven't had the discussion on the criteria, so I really can't offer much along those lines. So those are just my thoughts on this. I think it's a tough issue. I think it's a really important issue. Senator Latz, thank you for bringing it back and giving us a chance to look at it again.
Thank you. And Senator Newman, I just know you're going to make me take out my list of all the banks and credit card companies and private businesses that have been hacked into or hacked into by employees. I do still have that. Senator Hall, you are next. No comments. Senator Limmer.
Thank you. Senator Latz, I asked you a question that on the first hearing. I don't know if I got a specific answer, but maybe you've given some thought to it. We talked about the information that would be collected as non-hit data held for 90 days. Is that data subject to being placed into Fusion Center information and then the federal government keeps it way beyond 90 days? Have you given any thought to how that information is handled? Because I think if it is subject to a Fusion data induction, then the federal government will get this information, and by their practice, I don't think they follow Minnesota law once they get information into their hands, and I'm a little concerned about that.
Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, I might need some help from counsel here, but I think that the A7 amendment does, at least in part, address this by specifying that a law enforcement agency may share the data classified under this, under paragraph B, with another law enforcement agency, only if that agency complies with the requirements of this paragraph.
It's actually only, it doesn't get into
so whether a Fusion Center would be considered a law enforcement agency.
There's no authority to share.
I'm not sure. Maybe some language needs to be tweaked in that regard. It's not my intent to create a database that could end up without the controls that we're putting in place in this bill.
Madam Chair, Senator Letts, we've had lots of discussion over the years on data privacy, and when we share information beyond the borders of Minnesota, we lose our enforcement capability whenever we do that. And I can understand the A7 amendment as it applies to state law enforcement agencies. But once it goes beyond our border, I think we lose our control. And my experience has been federal government doesn't give us any information in this partnership we call a Fusion Center. They just are the collectors and gleaners from every state that's involved in that partnership.
Madam Chair, I would be comfortable.
Senator Latz?
I would be comfortable including some limiting language in the bill that says the data cannot be shared with any entity that might ultimately be in a position of releasing it to an organization or government that would not comply with the restrictions in here about.
Senator Latz, I believe there's the money from the BCA that would like to address Senator Limmer's question, if that's okay with you. Mr. Drew, welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I'm Drew Evans. I'm the Assistant Superintendent at the BCA, Senator Limmer, and members of the committee. The BCA does house the Fusion Center for the state of Minnesota. We, just to clarify for members, we do not receive any LPR information, and no LPR information is shared with our federal partners. And just as a point of clarification, we do at the Fusion Center receive a lot of information from the federal government, both the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI, that we regularly use to update our security in the state of Minnesota, and we use that information regularly. But we do not share any LPR information, do not receive any LPR information as part of the Fusion Center.
Thank you, Mr. Drew Evans. Got the name wrong, sorry.
Madam Chair,
Senator Latz.
Ms. Pontius, do we need to include any language in the bill that would prevent in the future any sharing of LPR data with the BCA?
Ms. Pontius?
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, first of all, the A7 amendment language technically only deals with Minnesota law enforcement agencies, and it was intended to make it clear that, because there is a blanket authority right now for them to share data. And so it just makes it clear to the extent that they're doing that, all of the requirements still apply as far as who has access. But it doesn't address the issue of what happens if it goes to another state. Now, off the top of my head, I think they'd still need, because the data are private, they'd still need some kind of authority to share the data unless there was some overriding federal requirement. So they couldn't just take this private non-public data and give it to, say, the Fusion Center or whatever. And I would defer to Mr. Evans on that if there's something different under federal law that somehow trumps that, but I think the state's classification would still control in terms of who they can share the data with.
Any response, Mr. Evans?
Madam Chair, members, I don't know of any specific federal overriding a statute or regulation that would override a private classification such as this.
Oh, that's Don. Let's see, Don. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Gamberly.
Madam Chairman, members, again, based on my experience of answering questions from government agencies, here's your reality. The FBI walks in the door and says, we're here from the FBI. You've got information we want. Give it to us. Okay? Now, there are people, strangely enough, who sometimes will challenge that. But by and large, what's going to happen is it's going to get handed over. And particularly with law enforcement, they're in the terrible position of having a partner who's saying to them, we need your help, give us information, and oh, by the way, we're partners in all this, okay? So whether or not there are laws, and there are lots of laws, that's the reality, okay? I think the first time I ever dealt with this is the FBI walked into a drug treatment center and demanded the names of all of the clients. And that particular guy said, no way in hell, if you'll pardon my language. In that case, there was a federal law that said law enforcement can't get access to drug treatment information. Still is on the books, as far as I know. So that's the real world.
All right, thank you. any more questions, members? All right, then, our Senator Lass.
If I could just briefly respond to Senator Newman's comments. I agree there's an issue about data protection that extends well beyond the questions of the data retention that's provided for in this bill. And I think we need to look at those issues of data protection for all of the data that is maintained by the state. Section 1 was one piece of that. But I think it's intellectually distinct from the question of how long do we retain the data that we have, because there's lots of government data that's retained for a long period of time, all subject to the concerns about data protection. In a sense, the problem that you've identified, Senator Newman, as an internal access question, mischief, I think you called it, that's a management problem in some respects, but it's a problem that we addressed in part last year by passing the law that makes it a crime for a person without proper authorization to access that data. And in fact, just in the last week, there was a news story about an employee of the St. Francis Police Department that improperly accessed that data and improperly disclosed it outside of the authorized group of people that could see it. That employee, it was an investigator in the police department there, and he was fired as a consequence, and he's being reviewed for prosecution for the crime that we created last year, a misdemeanor crime for that unauthorized access. So just parenthetically, I'll note also that police chief immediately sought an outside investigation to determine exactly what happened in that situation. So his own internal investigators weren't investigating themselves or their own colleagues. So I agree that it's a big concern. I think we ought to go back to what was removed as Section 1 in the bill and consider it in its broader context as a data protection and how we should address those issues. But I hope that we would keep that question separate from the length of period of retention for this particular data that's being collected.
All right. Members, should we vote? We are about a half an hour past our designated room time, but important discussion. And I think we should be ready to vote by now. Senator Latz, you want to renew your motion?
Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 86 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Senate floor.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Latz.
Includes here, right? Includes there.
Members, next meeting is on next Tuesday. at noon in this room.
Okay. Judiciary Policy Committee is adjourned. Thank you.
Thanks, Richard. Sorry.